voudrais bien commencer tout d'abord pour remercier Isabelle Aubert et Céline Jouin pour cette conférence fantastique qui m'a permis de vraiment bien apprendre beaucoup, beaucoup, beaucoup de choses parce que, et ça c'est une première confession que je dois faire, je ne suis ni philosophe ni juriste, mais je suis politologue. Donc parfois, dans les sciences sociales, j'ai bien l'impression qu'on a pourtant une perspective différente aux choses qui se présentent ici. Ça, c'est la première remarque que je voulais bien faire. Et la deuxième, je crois aussi que c'est vraiment important d'être ici ensemble en ce moment-là, parler du parlementarisme, parler de la démocratie moderne en ce temps-là, parce que je crois que cette démocratie moderne, elle est en péril, en fait. Et on va avoir, à partir de cet après-midi, à 17h, les matchs du championnat mondial du foot qui sera en Russie, et on verra les prochaines 4 semaines une véritable scène, un spectacle global qui va nous présenter un régime autoritaire d'une manière moderne, attractive. Et, voilà, et ça m'inquiète un petit peu, c'est pour ça que je trouve ça c'est absolument important que nous sommes ici et que nous discutons sur le parlementarisme, la démocratie et le droit ici ensemble. Donc, merci pour ça, et maintenant je vous prie aussi de bien vouloir comprendre que je continuerai en anglais parce que c'est la seule chose vraiment, que c'est d'habitude. Et je m'obligerai moi-même, dès que je suis ici la prochaine fois, je vais présenter un exposé en français, mais pour cette fois-là, je vous prie de bien vouloir excuser et que je continuerai en anglais. So, thank you very much for having me here, and please allow me, before I start with the paper, to give you some introductory remarks that might help you to understand what the paper and what the following remarks are all about. The very first thing is that what I'm going to present here is some sort of a work in progress. So it is some sort of reflections on the notion of state of exception as they can be found in authors like Hella and Kirchheimer. I could not manage to do Neumann as well due to the work in progress and due to some other obligations. But anyway, I could in some degree find some approaches to Hella and Kirchheim. And the motivation for presenting these issues here is that I'm trying to write a book not exactly on Demokratie im Ausnahmezustand in the global sense, but actually on the French case, on the 719 days that we had from November 2015 to November 2017. And the question is that haunts me a little bit is how to address state of emergency appropriately, and therefore we need to have some sort of theoretical foundations that allow us to enter into a sort of appropriate analysis of what is really going on in the public sphere, in the public debates, in the parliament, but also in when it comes to police actions down in the streets. So how do we bring these things together? And therefore I need some sort of theoretical foundation. And that is what I'm trying to think a little bit about. So this is also why I'm trying to present you these first preliminary things. So when you think about the notion of state of exception in the Weimar Republic, it is nearly constantly linked with the legal theory of Carl Schmitt. And even more, the jurist from Plettenberg is a key figure, a point of reference for two legal theorists to discuss here, for Hermann Heller and Otto Kirchheimer. And by the way, it's absolutely true that, and I don't really know why, that anyone who is writing about state of emergency is sooner or later going to cite Carl Schmitt. And I will do that later on too, but I'm right now preparing a very first essay where I try to work on state of emergency without citing Carl Schmitt, and I'm wondering how this will be appreciated or not by the scientific community. But once you know, or once you find a paper on the state of exception or state of emergency that does not cite Carl Schmitt, please send it to me. I would be glad to read that. So what makes it interesting as important to have a close look at the differences in the three approaches to the notion of exception is the fact that current democracies show a strong tendency towards authoritarianism. This authoritarianism very often comes together with an intensive use of the state of exception. And we can see this in France, which you mentioned, avec la normalisation dans le code de la sécurité intérieure. We see it even worse in Turkey with the implementation of the so-called presidential constitution during a state of emergency. And we can also in various forms witness it in the United States when it comes to issue these executive orders. It's always when Trump shows his signature on a paper into a camera, and then you certainly have something that is, although the American Constitution does not have a state of emergency or does not know it, that comes close to a state of emergency practice. So the main question for me that I want to try to develop on a little bit is how to analyze these processes of state of exception appropriately, and what might be an appropriate theoretical foundation of such an analysis. And therefore, I think we can find some interesting aspects in Heller and Kirchheimer, and I'm not that very sure if we find them in Carl Schmitt, but these three authors give me my orientation in this talk, so I will very briefly start to give you some central ideas. Actually, I'm not sure if I really need to, because you are all very much aware of them. I will talk a little bit about Carl Schmitt, develop on his ideas on state of exception, and then we'll go on to the critique of Schmitt in Heller's works, which will be a little bit longer, and then the key issue in this talk will be on Kirchheimer and his view on what I would call some sort of a complex state of emergency. State of exception, sorry. So first, let's come to Carl Schmitt. The title of this talk implies that Heller and Kirchheimer would provide a different notion of state of exception. The question then is different with regard to what or whom. The answer, of course, is simple. It's Carl Schmitt. Schmitt's perspective on the state of exception is more than often reduced to that one single sentence coming from Die politische Theologie, and which reads, souverän ist, wer über den Ausnahmezustand entscheidet. The consequences of this sentence are as radical as one-dimensional in their understanding of politics. Schmitt's starting point is the examination of the existential conditions of the political order of the state. I quote, "It can be said that the exceptional case has a particularly decisive meaning that reveals the essence of things. Only in actual struggle, the ultimate consequence of the political grouping of friend and enemy becomes apparent. From this most extreme possibility, people's lives gain their specific political tension." End of quote. For Schmitt, the acceptance of such an existential dimension, of such an exceptional case, constitutes the political foundation of a community. It is the actual occurrence of a manifest crisis situation that generates the need to identify the enemy, which establishes political unity. The political unity emerging from a common action against a perceived threat, whether from outside or inside, is described as sovereign. Sovereignty is no longer merely a legal category, but an expression of political will in the face of the urgency to unite and to avert danger. It means political determination for unity against the enemy. I quote again. "That is enough to justify a reasonable concept of sovereignty and unity. By its very nature, political unity is the decisive unit, no matter from which forces it draws its ultimate psychological motives. It exists or does not exist. If it exists, it is the highest decisive unit in the relevant case." Thus, the relationship between sovereignty and state of exception is not a legal attribution of competences within an institutional structure. Rather, it proves itself to be an existential description of the political as a sphere of friend-enemy distinction, including the willingness and preparedness to kill inherent to the political subjects. The enemy becomes an enemy only when he questions the given organized existence. The conflict manifested in the enemy, in the other, arises from the negation of the order. the self-proclaimed order, which Schmitt conceives as a rigid entity devoid of any ability to compromise, asserts itself by responding to the necessity of pacification when an emergency occurs. The enemy is just the other, the stranger, and in a particularly intensive sense, it is extensionally something else and alien, so that in extreme cases, conflicts with it are possible, cannot be solved neither by a general standardization made in advance, nor by the verdict of an uninvolved and therefore impartial third party. The crisis, which is manifest in an exceptional situation, necessarily requires an efficient and successful response from the entire political community, a reaction beyond any compromise. One can only remain sovereign if one is able to intervene ad hoc and to manage the exceptional situation with success. At this point, Schmitt's anti-democratic attitude comes to light. In representative democracies, the people is the legitimate source of all law. It is able to set the law and thus to define spheres from norm validity. When norms are set, the pouvoir constitué takes over the political leadership. It remains, if one wants to stick to Schmitt's dictum, only the executive as actually sovereign core of a once established state order. Government decides situationally when to act according to which rules and, in doing so, decouples itself from the pouvoir constituant. In the tradition of Roman Republic, Schmitt called the highest concentration of executive-based crisis reaction a dictatorship. He distinguished between the two notions of souveräne und kommissarische Diktatur. The souveräne Diktatur is per dictum situated beyond the legal state, as it describes the very power of a political entity to decide on whether it wants to adopt the legal framework or not. It can be understood that as the power to establish, or it can be understood, sorry, as the power to establish a constitution. Contrary to the souveräne Diktatur, the kommissarische Diktatur is an instrument of crisis intervention, existing only with a given legal framework. The souveräne Diktatur is the very incarnation of sovereignty, while the kommissarische Diktatur is nothing but a tool of governing. With this definition, sovereignty and exception find themselves deeply linked. And it is without any doubt the merit of Schmitt to have clearly elaborated on that link, no matter if one might like or refuse the political assumptions his thinking is based on. But given the current practice of state of exception in liberal democracies, this purely legal and theoretical framework won't lead any further when it comes to understand, for example, the normalization processes that we have seen here in France. The question thus is on how to enlarge the concept of state of exception so that it enables us to better understand contemporary developments. The works of Heller and Kirchheimer might provide some ideas on how such an enlargement could look like. So I'd now like to make some remarks on Heller's critique on Schmitt, and later on we'll come to Kirchheimer. Hermann Heller was a supporter of parliamentary democracy nearly throughout his life. For his understanding of law, the integration and reciprocity of legal norms and social and political practice was essential. Given this understanding, his critique of Schmitt's position is fundamental. According to Heller, Schmitt's definition of sovereignty becomes particularly contradictory when one considers the question of who should be the sovereign subject of Schmitt. Who or what is the authority? Who can exceptionally and with sovereign power break through the legal order and is therefore superior to it? So there are two major elements of Heller's critique. The first, Schmitt's later admission that Hitler as Reichspräsident and Reichskanzler as the so-called Führer was sovereign under Article 48 of the Weimar Constitution is in contradiction to his own thesis on the kommissarische Diktatur. While the kommissarische Diktatur only suspends the democratic constitution in order to protect this very constitution in an emergency, the souveräne Diktatur establishes the state that it claims to protect. In Die Diktatur, Schmidt therefore saw in Article 48 the, I quote, quite clear case of a kommissarische Diktatur and recommended special attention that the unlimited empowerment in no way meant a dissolution of the entire existing legal status and the transfer of sovereignty to the Reichspräsident should. So, either the dictatorship by the Reichspräsident is a provisional one, or the Reichspräsident is absolutely sovereign. To assert both at the same time is contradictory. The second element of Heller's critique. It remains unclear who, according to Schmidt's thesis, should be the subject of sovereignty in the normal state. This is unquestionably regulated in the Weimar Constitution, which states, the state power emanates from the people, Article 1, Clause 2. Does Schmidt want to claim that in the normal state, the people in the state of exception, the president is sovereign? This leads, as Heller remarks, to the acceptance of two sovereigns in the same state. But if at the same time sovereignty shall be understood as the uniform, highest, undecided power of ruling power, this too is an internal contradiction in Schmidt's concept of sovereignty. This contradiction can be avoided by a unified theory of sovereignty in normal and exceptional cases. I quote, sovereign is therefore who has decided on the normal state by the written or unwritten constitution, who perpetuates it willfully and who continues to decide. And only those who decide on the constitutional normal state legally also decide on the state of exception, if necessary, contra legem. End of quote. Who or what then is this unitary subject of sovereignty? The legal system, the president, or the demos? Heller considers all these possible answers to be non-dialectical and instead proposes that the state shall be understood as, I quote, the organization, the structure of action organized according to the unity of decision and effect. End of quote. The legal system, the demos, and the government are each an element of the organization of the state. He understands the legal orders as order as a manifestation of the actual order of social life. The parties thus create the legal order in order to increase the security from a regular return of unity-forming behavior and thus the security of the duration of the action structure. For Heller, people is only the name for the totality of human achievements, which are updated by special organs in determined direction, in a determined direction to unified performance and context. After all, the government is the special organ, the acting center, which organizes and unites the multiform contributions of the individual people belonging to the state. Sovereign is now none of these elements of the state taken by itself, but the action structure as such. Sovereign is the organization. Heller's theory of sovereignty thus conveys, in a legal theoretical perspective, objectivism and subjectivism by allowing both to come to their rights. Objectivism preserves the momentum of the existing legal system, which defines responsibilities and is therefore presupposed by individual actions with powerful public powers. Subjectivism is preserved because it regards the legal order as validated by human practice and preserved in its validity. Then I would like to come to the third point and to have a look at, after this conception of a state of exception and the critique Heller issued to the notion of sovereignty in Schmidt, I would like to come to what is the approach that could be offered or could be found in Kirchheimer to that notion of exception. Kirchheimer's contribution to the notion of exception finds its expression in the idea of a, what I call, complex state of exception. To understand the foundation of Kirchheimer's concept, the following four elements or perspectives of his legal theory seem to be crucial to me. First, Kirchheimer understands law in no way as a rigid, formal, or abstract, but as a politically contested and always in change, which is not surprising given the Marxist point of view in his theory. He assumes that law has different meanings for different people. In law, not everything is based upon logical and comprehensible processes. In order to make law and state describable and to recognize their effect, Kirchheimer underlines that practice is the benchmark. For him, this means taking the situation into perspective from the point of view of the homme situé. Abstract and formal descriptions are thus kept in the mirror of the role of the individual, a mirror in which the contours of a critical analysis of the existing order can emerge. This becomes evident when the possibility of relying on one's own rights is not available to all equally, or may only be rudimentary. The second point. The conflict over rights is exemplified in the remarks of Kirchheimer on grace and amnesty. Their historical role has been to fill in the gaps in unfinished and imperfect legal systems. From this, a contested instrument has developed by which the state tries to legitimize itself. Taking the question of grace as a structural example and removing it from the framework of the juridical process reveals what is at stake: the integrity of people as political subjects. In the course of amnesty, it is less about punishment and freedom, but about erasing the memory and context of an act that is power and politics. The sovereign has the opportunity to determine who may participate in which shares in society. Participation is thus described from a personal and political perspective at an extreme point. Grace-mediated status is a highly fragile one. If the political climate changes, the status can change, be weakened or withdrawn. Third element. Kirchheimer's work on political justice offers an approach to understand these developments. He is not concerned with a morally based criticism of political justice or state practice, not a good or bad state, but more a proper representation of its effects. He sees political justice in both democratic and totalitarian states as common occurrences. They provide advantages that are otherwise difficult or impossible to achieve. The basic problem of political justice we find with Kirchheimer's thought, through a lack of common values in modern societies. Outcome and procedures of political justice reinforce this development. Law thus becomes an instrument that creates facts and can be used for order and sorting. The result is a generation of friend and enemy, difference and unity. Fourth element. In this mixed and complicated situation, it is also important which concept is opposed to all this. An entanglement of a negative that is not approving and an almost constructive suggestion, Kirchheimer made a remarkable statement. I quote, "To argue endlessly about the thing itself, but to keep the system functioning by sacrosanct procedural rules. Possibly this would be a way out of our dilemma." End of quote. Kirchheimer does not seek a united will, but rather the possibility of individuality as a whole. He was extremely skeptical about its implementation. For him, social conditions are so marked by political apathy and alienation that many people are no longer able to access their own lives. Given these conditions, the act of retreat and isolation becomes a way of regaining control over one's life and reality. This overview shows that developments are coming up, especially in eras where the unclear issue of sovereignty and democracy has to be located. By means of Kirchheimer's perspective, it becomes clear that social participation, the secure status of individuals as political subjects, or legal equality are at least wavering. This goes along with political losses of solidarity and, on the other side, with a growing abstention and isolation of the people. Thus, topics become political issues and occasion for the exercise of power, which should be essentially inalienable rights in democracies or should be the basis of a reflexive participation or progressive formation of society. It becomes clear that law is by no means the expression and the enabling of free will, but that law tends to strengthen particular positions. In this way, Kirchheimer asks liberal democracies questions about their everyday practice. His conclusions sometimes show a high degree of coherence with current developments. I'll come back to that at the end. The point of departure for sharpening the concept of a complex state of exception lies in the process of inclusion and exclusion made clear by Kirchheimer in various places. Who decides on the possibility of participation? How is it shaped? What conditions is it linked to? Who is beyond society? Globally speaking, a classification according to the criteria of difference and unity can be recognized there. It's not a freedom of difference, but rather a request and a decision, a friend-enemy distinction, not affirmative but critical. At the beginning of the Politische Justiz, Kirchheimer states that he was not concerned with the government and its opponents, but with regimes and their enemies, and thus not about details and changes on small scale, but about general developments. It is about who is part of the regime and who declares to be an enemy or who enjoys the rights and who is deprived from them. Carl Schmitt, again, offers important keywords on the state of exception under two aspects. For one thing, his version of the state of exception calls into question the possibility of speaking of a complex state of emergency. The link with democracy means the loss of clear change of command, weakens the general effect of an order, and prevents the exception from appearing as a distinctive event. On the other hand, his assumptions can serve as a vehicle to criticize the features of liberal democratic order. However, not to enter into the tenor of Schmitt, but rather in acknowledgement that aspects of Schmitt's concept of democracy can be found in democratic reality, Kirchheimer turns Schmitt against Schmitt. After all, the state of emergency is by no means a lawless space, but the adjustment of this space and the adaptation to a new state. The state does not suddenly diffuse or give up all its protective functions, but there are momentous changes that can threaten or deprive individuals or certain groups in their status. It is also not a perfect constitutional state. The interplay of order and upheaval is close to each other and does not necessarily mean a revolutionary change. With Schmitt, too, there is the assumption that order and exceptions are interdependent and that order is based on a violently guaranteed order and, at the same time, is constantly re-established through decisions. One can see that Kirchheimer uses many categories and perspectives of Schmitt and, at the same time, works on them. Although Kirchheimer's thinking is determined by the idea that there should be a decision, a concrete intervention in political processes, his political impetus is different. Although it is formulated very few times, he wants to enhance participation, intervention, and political participation. For Schmitt, the search for decision in principle goes beyond an authoritarian model, which is not determined by procedures and techniques, but by unity and identity. In contrast, Kirchheimer is by no means concerned with the political leveling of a minority and the approach to an authoritarian presidential model. Influenced by Schmitt, he uses his analysis much more to critically present the practices and action of the liberal bourgeois capitalist democracies. There is much to suggest that it is more about a normal state than a state of exception. The exception is an event. The exception in the democratic framework, which I've tried to describe, is more of a generic arrangement. The framework, the basic structure, remains. It does not change, or if it does so, only slowly. That is a feature of democracy. It is not about a fundamentally different state. the abolition of class antagonism arise to religious salvation or the transition to strict subordination. The concept of a complex state of exception is obviously limited. Stefan Kraut uses the term permanent state of emergency with referent to Wolfgang Nauck. This was, I quote, a mute, an implicit and noiseless state of emergency, not a state of emergency of the explicit gesture of the sovereign, which is based on the use of unwritten rules, the so-called second codes or informal programs, the specifications of what should be done, how and what not, end of quote. It is not about the one powerful sovereign, but about the niche, vague regulations, opacity, varying and unclear responsibilities of legal diffusion. In the following, coming to the end, I would like to point out with the help of three aspects how a concept of complex state of emergency can be understood following the thoughts of Kirchheim. First element. Kirchheimer perceives society as a pluralist entity in progress and upheaval. It is not only about the further development of a social order, the transition to something new, but also about the difficult solution and progress from the forces of an old order. Society creates moments in which decisions and approval are required, in which a clear intervention is needed. A legal system alone is legal. Legitimacy can only be created by political consent. The judges and civil servants are primarily responsible for this purpose. While the majority of the population sits on the stands and has nothing more to do than to nod and not to leave a certain frame. It is these relationships, fed by the constellation of the Cold War, in which state and legal practice insist on pushing out opinions, actions, or organizations, depriving them from an equal subject status and the sense of participation in consent to the existing. It is a social formation that creates an association over and over again with a different focus and on participation or abstention. Second element. The sharpness of the process outlined here is accelerated by ambiguities and inequalities that point right to the practice of democracy. In my opinion, an inequality is generated and used again and again in this course of things. This can in turn be grounded with some of Schmitt's ideas, which Kirchheimer works intensively on, and revolve around the substantive justice principle of democracy. This principle does not mean that everyone has the same opportunities, but rather the fact that everyone has the same opportunity to get a 51% majority. Structurally, these opportunities exist either in freedom or in the prohibition of coalitions. At the level of standards, they say that everyone has the same opportunity. Things become difficult once a majority is determined, because the idea of same opportunity relates only to the dispute and the decision. Following Schmitt, the majority gets a political premium on the legal power possession. The same chance creates an unequal opportunity. Kirchheimer calls this a principle which contains massive benefits to the government, putting it in front of the opposition. Third element. A reassessment of the role of sovereignty reveals the scope of the concept of complex state of exception. According to the ideal type, everyone should be a sovereign in a democracy. This is hardly possible under given conditions, and the ideal can at best serve as a point of orientation. The reading of Kirchheimer shows that even this hardly applies. One consequence of the effects outlined above is that the role of sovereignty is contested and unilateral shortages can be identified or feared. The sovereign is not only framed or divided, but many are unable to use their sovereignty or to empower themselves. Sovereignty effects, therefore, are exclusive. A complex state of exception is not a brutal invasion of a new authoritarian order. Much more, it can be understood as a collection of different shifts in different areas. What is central is that they do not have a universal impact, but they tend to affect people as individuals, groups, opponents, or opposition, jeopardizing, modifying, or threatening their status as political subjects or citizens. The decisions and effects often come in the niche of fragmented sovereignty between legal and economic issues in the unclear guidelines of open norms. There are mechanisms of exclusion, non-grant, or withdrawal of rights. The law gets massively in trouble. There are constant interactions of normal and exceptional states, which in their movement always produce the assignments according to unity and difference to us and to them. Kirchheimer allows us to think a complex state of exception. This condition can be read off from the integrity of the individual in the social and political process. Oriented on Kirchheimer, this can be an open or concealed state, which takes place in everyday life, not necessarily in transition, but in the constant progression of society. The consequences for those affected are concrete and massive with regard to the impossibilities to participate in social and political life. In practice, these tendencies to varying degrees can be recognized at various points. Many current developments can be seen in this sketch with their threatening potential, for example, crisis intervention policy, right-wing populism, the difference between public statements and political action in the course of the refugee movements, but also in the diffusion of statehood. Of course, not everything does have to fit, but the basic question of the order of difference of unity, the tendency for inclusion and exclusion, is getting more and more pressing. The fragmentation of the concept of sovereignty inherent in democracy is hardly taken up productively or as a challenge, but on the contrary, it is used to particularization, restriction of rights, and the withdrawal of influence. So please allow me now some very short and final remarks on this. The state of emergency is much more than a purely legal issue. And this is what I said also in the beginning when I tried to warn you that I am not a philosopher nor a legal scholar, but a political scientist. So the question is always, what does that have to do with the occurrences, what we had yesterday as well behind that very window there? So the state of exception is much more than a purely legal issue. It is more than a decision, more than a shift in the application of legal norms. Beyond all that, state of exception is a strategy to enforce fundamental change, political, legal, social, and economical within a given society. Heller and Kirchheimer, both in a very specific perspective, understand that state of exception can only be addressed properly if we take into account that it is a constant process affecting these various spheres in modern societies in a very concrete way. Adopting this perspective is crucial in a twofold sense. First, only if we consider state of exception as a complex process, we will be able to address properly what can be called normalization of the exception. And second, by doing so, it obliges political theorists to aim at an integration of the theoretical, empirical dimension of their subject. That was some sort of that question we also addressed yesterday, and which seems to me to be very crucial, to be very important given the current situation we are in. Taken together, these two steps are indispensable for a modern political theory that is interested in maintaining democracy. Thank you very much.